Welcome to the latest edition of Pass the Baton, a podcast to educate agricultural businesses and farmers on how to work through generational transfer of farms. Hi everyone, welcome to our latest podcast for Pass the Baton. My name's Tony Catt, Director of Catapult Wealth. Today I'm joined by Director of Leading Teams, Daniel Healy. Daniel, welcome and thanks for coming along today.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be here.
Today, it's a bit of an interesting topic in a sense that it became very evident to me for people going through farming families, going through succession planning and going through transition planning, trying to move businesses from one generation to the next. They're still a team and they still need to behave like a team. And there's a lot of, as you'll hear from Daniel, a lot of tough conversations to be had around this sort of generational change. And so I thought it was appropriate that I think this stuff is right in the wheelhouse of leading teams and that we got some experts on to talk about tough conversations and hence Daniel appearing today. So Daniel, I'm going to kick off by, can you just give everyone out there, and some you know would not even really know what leading teams does. I think it'd be good background to say who leading teams are and what do they do?
Yeah. So we're an organisation that had its roots in elite sport, and I'm lucky enough to be one of the participants in the first ever experience with the model at Central Districts in this Sandful competition 20 odd years ago, where the founder of the model, Ray McLean, was trialling an empowerment model and around this idea that getting a group of people to come together and agree on their values, work on relationships so that they could have what we'll call genuine conversations rather than tough conversations, and we'll probably elaborate on that a little bit more later. Mm. So focusing on the dynamics piece, the culture, to help improve performance.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to experience that in a couple of experiences with sporting teams as the participant, a real change in performance based on that. And so really lucky years later to circle back around and be now involved day-to-day, working predominantly now in businesses. Same with Ray, the fellow I was just talking about, wrote a book called Any Given Team, which is a really good read for those who are interested in reading. And whilst it's a cliched label, we do believe that the same principles that apply to those sporting teams around that culture piece will apply to any given team. And you've now stretched it to family, and it's absolutely great. I did come from a farming background, so I do get a bit of what we're talking about today, but that concept that they are a team, they've got some really challenging situations, they then bring wives, partners, husbands into the mix to make it even a more interesting dynamic. And so absolutely we think that'd be relevant for them as well.
Yeah, that is a good book. I've read it myself, the one Ray wrote. You wrote that a number of years ago, and I've actually reread it, and it still resonates with me just as much as it did years ago. I will disclose that we've been working with Daniel and leading teams now for probably the best part of 5 years, and more recently we've used the program even more with introducing our next crop of emerging leaders, as we call them. So we've seen the program and with Daniel firsthand, and ultimately I wouldn't be sitting here today having this conversation if we didn't think it had provided an enormous amount of value and an enormous amount of change to our organization. And I can see the absolute parallels, as Daniel said, with what we have done and what you know and what could happen in a family business of any size and any degree. And I'm going to start there. You know, starting at the start, what it doesn't matter what size business you are, doesn't matter what size team you are. A lot of people go, oh, it's just a husband, a wife, and a son. Daniel, does size matter in that regard?
Fundamentally, they're a group of people come together. We'd say any more than one is a team, right?
Yeah.
And the questions you know we ask is, you know, how are we going? It's fundamentally having some conversations that perhaps we have a model that focuses on two parts: mechanics and dynamics. Now, the mechanics of the farm is what they're going to throw into the ground and all of that stuff. And that'll be the bit that'll get focused on. And that's the same in any team, sporting or otherwise. Generally, when we ask people, they'll say that 80 to 90% of the time we spend in the mechanics versus the dynamics. And why? When we ask why, the two answers we generally get is because it's tangible and it's measurable.
Yep.
And the other one is because it's easier.
Yeah.
When the you know what hits the fan, it's easier just to go, let's go and jump in
plant
that tractor.
The crop.
Let's go and do that rather than let's have that conversation. And, and of course, what happens to that conversation? It sits there, it festers, it becomes worse and worse. So absolutely, it doesn't matter how many in it. It's a team of people. Do they want to improve? Do they want to get better? Mm. Then we think the focus on the conversation, on the dynamic, on the culture piece is a really important one.
Mm. You place a lot of emphasis and you talk about values a lot, Daniel. Do you want to elaborate on how important that is in terms of trying to, trying to establish what your values are, and B, then how do you implement them through your business?
And even before that, I reckon if a family is sitting down and thinking about some of this succession planning and how they're all going, the better and bigger question to ask before that is the why. So why are we all here?
Yeah.
Why do we exist? Now, they're going to say, make money. Make money will be every business. Put that bit aside. Why are we here? At Leading Teams, we exist to improve individual and team's performance. Mm. I know you guys at Hub 39 have got a purpose around helping
people's lives. Yeah.
That group of people, they bring a daughter-in-law in, they have grandchildren and they have sons that come and work on the farm. Why are they doing it?
Mm.
That's a really important question. Why? Because it gives them a pivot point, a North Star. Mm. It gives them that focal point so that every decision we make as we go, that's why we said we were here.
Mm.
I know certainly for us at Leading Teams, that's the decision. If we get a prospective client ring us and want us to do something with them, our question isn't how much money it's going to pay. Is that brief? Are we going to be able to fulfill our purpose of improving a team or an individual?
Mm.
That's why you have a purpose. So I'm not sure how many times that conversation, I mean, the simple answer would be, because it's been passed down to you, but why are we really here?
Yeah. And you're right. A lot of people just take that conversation for granted, don't they? They just, because dad did it or because grandpa did it. And I'm sure there's some truth in that. And there's to articulate it appropriately for the current generation of what is currently happening today is really important.
Well, because we talk in terms of common purpose, the idea is it just gets us all together on that same page, running in the same direction.
Mm.
Certainly, the example to the flip side, we talked about any given team before. One of my colleagues a few years ago worked with a rock band, and it was a three-piece rock band, and he asked them the question, what's the purpose? And one of them said to connect with the hearts and minds of the people. Mm. One of them said to make truckloads of money, and one of them said to make great rock and roll. Now, who was right, wrong? Who knows? The problem was they were all different.
Yes.
And it wasn't my colleague's job to pick which one he liked, but his job was to get that on the same page. And so why are we still here is a really good, complex question, but a good one to thrash out for start. That's the why. Your values bit is then how are we going to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
I've married into this family, or I'm inheriting this, or I'm the person who started all this.
Mm.
What are my values and do they all line up? Mm. And so then we talk in terms of behaviours rather than just words. What behaviours do we want to see from each other? What's going to make this work?
Mm.
You've got the what over here. That's the mechanics. That's the what we're putting in the ground. That's the rotation. That's that stuff. That stuff will generally take care of itself.
Mm.
But if we have these values and we have the why, it's going to be easy to have conversations about that other piece.
Do you think then, Daniel, and clearly one of the biggest differences that a corporate firm like ours has in we then establish our values, we sit down and have a discussion, we agree on those values, but then what we can do, I suppose, at a corporate level is we can go hire people that represent those values, and we can say, hey, we're interviewing, and we can say, no, you don't represent the values, but so therefore you're not going to get in here. The trouble, I mean, tell me otherwise, but the trouble I see with families, I suppose, is that, well, it's my son or it's my daughter and they're coming back on the farm and it's not really an interview process per se. So is there an assumption that the culturally you're going to align?
Yeah, but it's a good point. But there wouldn't be. You'd hope there's some alignment through how you brought them up. But I understand it's not. They've gone away and explored and seen. I get all that.
Yeah.
But the point is, sit them down. When that bit starts, sit them down and have the conversation and let's come to some agreement. And that values piece, those behaviours piece won't look that different from farm to farm, from business to business. I had someone, I was trying to, I went to, luckily I have to go to America with an SA client, and what we were trying to do is take the values that we had here and say to that mob, are you happy to adopt these? Mm. So we'd always want them to buy in rather than tell them, right? So it's a agree bit.
Yeah.
And one of them sat there about half an hour and said, Daniel, reading these values, it's basically how I'd ask my three-year-old to behave.
So
generally when we look at a values piece, we're not asking people for anything special.
No.
The challenge, that the cynicism, the frustration with values is that the people at the top often aren't living what the sign says on the – and that person at the top in this case is the patriarch or the
– matriarch,
of the – that's where some of the challenges is.
And ultimately, so what I've heard there, Daniel, is A, you've got to have the conversation, and two, though, if you don't get buy-in, and if there is, if either the conversation doesn't happen or you don't get buy-in, it could create a lot of conflict, I assume.
Yeah, the one thing you want to say up front, and this will come with some of the older generation, if you're not up for an empowerment model where you want your people to have a say and a voice and shared values, don't go down this path, because you give people a ray of hope, oh, you're going to give me a say in this, and then really you're actually not. So the idea, you're either up for empowerment or not. And there'll be plenty of people out there who've probably always done the old school way, oh, I'll just tell people what to do. That's certainly a method of doing it. I'm not going to sit here and debate the which one's right or wrong, but certainly if you're going to go down the path of engaging in people to create the world they want, then we've actually got to let that happen. The cynicism comes when you say this. Someone will say, well, we don't want the tail wagging the dog or the lunatic. Well, if we think we've got lunatics in this, then we'll say something about our leadership to start.
Yeah.
This empowerment model doesn't stop leaders from making strong decisions.
Yes.
But it's about getting buy-in from the people so we're all on the one page. We all understand the why.
Yeah.
So that when we need to, we can have some of those hard, genuine conversations.
Absolutely. And where I can see, it's hard because you don't want to, as parents, get into marital advice for your kids or in terms of who they date or don't date, and because they're all going to make their own decisions. But you get in-laws coming into a farming family arrangement, and they could come from a completely different set of a background and a different environment. I think it's still important that you talk about these issues with them, because they're really big. I'll call them, if they're not actual owners, they're emotional owners in the business.
Yeah, but again, no different to someone new. Be clear, setting a agreed set of behaviours or values isn't about having a cardboard cutouts and having diversity is brilliant. We want to embrace. In fact, that might be one of your values, that we embrace new ideas.
Yes,
but it's just about getting an agreement around that piece.
Yeah.
If we're bringing an in-law into the piece, that's great, but here's how we are as a family. Don't care background, don't care socioeconomic, can he or she fit into this? That's the question we're asking. Of course, as you say, that becomes a bit more complex when we're then suggesting, hey, son, I reckon you picked the wrong one here because he doesn't fit.
Yeah, no,
but
I agree.
But that would be slightly different when you're saying it from, I'm just a parent or I don't think you, versus we've got a business here to run.
We still have to do it this way, or we want to do it this way. I think diversity is a really good point, and I'm really glad you raised that. How families then that communicate that and go through a program like yours, how do the values then get used to help improve communication, mate? How do you use that, and how's that developed?
So the other piece in the puzzle, which again is assumed and could be a better start than some businesses, is there's trusting relationships, right?
Yeah.
So trusting, we've got trust and respect, and again, that'll probably ebb and flow more in a family. But you'd say a lot of the time the basis is there. You got these values, it allows you to have these genuine conversations. So the idea is the behaviours we've agreed on, the purpose we've agreed on. We have a meeting, we have a catch up. Hey, how are we going against that? Didn't we say we were going to be that? How are we going with that? It allows for you called them tough. The reason we call them genuine is because as soon as I say I want to have a tough conversation with you, I've already talked myself out of it.
Yeah.
They are tough, we get that, but we use the language genuine. And Tony, if you and I have trust and respect between us, and you challenge me on something, I know you've done it because you care about me and you want to get better. That's where the relationship bit helps. The framework we've agreed to, well, you can refer to that. Hey, we all, didn't we? Oh, yeah, good call, thank you, versus you being a twat or whatever. Yeah. So it helps have those conversations. And what do those conversations do? Well, clearly they help our performance.
Yes.
That's where it gets better. They help our performance. It means these bigger succession questions that are really scary and ugly, an elephant in the room, they're not as big and ugly because we're having conversations all the way along.
Yeah. And I think that I want to go down the rabbit hole a little bit with the relationship bit, just Daniel, for a minute. And I think that's been probably the crucial learning for me going through this program over the last 3 to 4 years. Is that if you have no depth of relationship with your cohort, your offsider, your colleagues, it makes all of this very hard.
Yeah. Well, and I guess in a family that can often be that there was some depth and there's been a break in trust along the way or something, and that we've gone further up in the, in the levels of relationship. So, and we talk, I guess, and we talked before we came on air about people, probably families taking that piece for granted. And when we're talking with businesses, we talk about people don't spend enough time in there. They use the language, they don't have time. What they're really saying is they don't prioritise them.
Yes.
They don't prioritise them. Why? Because they don't see any value in them, because there's not the tangible. Well, we're there to challenge that they are the cornerstone of that, of being able to have those conversations that drive performance. So they come first, and it's challenging. It takes time, and sometimes there needs some very repairing. And the other bit is that doesn't necessarily mean, even if it's in-laws, it's not necessarily about being best friends. No. It's about this mutual trust and respect. So we have an understanding, we have a joint understanding of the purpose. We've agreed on how we're going to behave, and then we can have conversations based around that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, you know, I see a lot of, particularly I'm going to be stereotypical here, Daniel, is brothers in farming families that are trying to work together. And just sometimes they just, as I said, they take each other for granted. They don't spend enough time probably outside of the business together, just having that depth of relationship and asking good, having good conversations about other parts of their lives and what's going on with each other. And I think to be honest, Farming Australia is getting better at that. If I was completely honest with what I see around, but nowhere near good enough. And I guess then what happens and what I've perceived a little bit is, you know, that if you walk past, if you don't deal with this, and you know, 1 year can turn into 5 years pretty quickly. I'm sure that you've seen situations where, you know, when 5 years goes past and the depth, the relationship hasn't been worked on, it's not irreparable. I'm sure you've seen it, but it makes it a lot harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, I did some work with a really prominent business in SA, and we were evaluating the relationships, and we have five tiers in a relationship pyramid that you would have seen before. And these two had started the business 25 years ago. So I'm going to make assumption that at that stage there was a fairly strong business. Yeah. When they rated themselves, they actually made their own tier up even higher than level one, as in worse.
At the opposite end.
So clearly something had happened along the way. So absolutely that can be the case. And of course, we don't bother working on it, and that just becomes worse and worse. To your brother's example, I guess that's the other piece in this, the mental health piece. I know. I did a check-in, we call them check-ins, about the relationship, how was everyone feeling with a client one day, and it was a new girl there, and I said, why do you reckon we did that? And her answer was, for mental health. I feel so much safer in this environment now. And I said, you know what, that's not actually the main intent. The main intent to build trust and respect, but gee, it's lovely to hear you say that. And we all know the challenges with mental health, and certainly in the farming community across the board, but certainly with males our age and younger. And it's becoming more and more fashionable, and we're trying to get this idea that, and I, even with my ex-football mates, instead of us just all getting on the drink now, we're trying to do better at having conversations. I had a marriage separation a few years ago. When I reached out and told them all that, I had three of them come to me with their own story that I had no idea about. Our ability to focus on that relationship side, especially us guys, and let our guard down and do that with brothers or whatever, is going to be pivotal for all of it. But the mental health piece is huge there as well.
I couldn't agree more, and I've certainly seen the benefits in our business as well. It's interesting, even in, you know, in husband and wives, you know, being in business and being in a family are tough. Families can be, you know, tough at the best of times in managing relationships, but trying to wear different hats at different times, even husband and wife. And I know my wife often says to me, I'll never work with you, Tony, you know, like just married to you is good enough. But you know, it is challenging. And that's where I always say family business, and I know you've seen a lot of family businesses over your time, Daniel, is it can be complicated. And I think a lot of people in the family business sector, and particularly the farming sector, they probably sometimes just need to give themselves a bit of I call it a break, you know, just to understand it is challenging. They all think they've got to be perfect all the time, and that bravado kicks in, and that front kicks in, and I don't know, it's tough.
Yeah, and I sit here, talk all the theory, and it sounds bloody, it's a good point. Working with business is hard enough, working with family, throw that to get you're a spot on. That's all the more reason why your language is great. Stop, have some conversations. This is not about perfection, but it's about acknowledging what's not perfect and what can we do. But all of this takes vulnerability and letting your guard down and accepting that we're not perfect, accepting that I could have done. And that's one of the challenges for the older generation often is being vulnerable enough to allow the younger crew to have their ideas, to accept that perhaps we could do things differently, that I don't know everything. That vulnerability piece is huge if the family and the business are going to come together and make it work. Because you're right, you throw that together and that's effectively says it's doubly as hard, I would have thought.
You've touched on a great point, and I want to just go down that rabbit hole for a little bit. Being vulnerable, Daniel, you know, and I'm going to say the least, in a stereotypical sense, farmers, you know, probably struggle with that concept a lot, and, you know, not just in a mental health concept, but just in any concept, you know, that stoic, you know, and sometimes just boils down to that need to provide to their family, and they're in contact with something, with the earth every day, and feeding their family. It's a great thing to do. They struggle with being vulnerable.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you're right. You're probably generalizing with farmers. Yeah. We could throw a few different occupations to be the same. Certainly males, we could generalize again and say, yeah. And I guess, probably an example I can use. I had a client who's a bit younger, mid-30s, male, MD of a business of 50 or 60 people. And through some of the work we'd done and through challenging himself, he opened up to his team one day about his mental health and anxiety challenges he's had since he's a teenager. Mm. The outcome for him, depends which way you look at it, worst scenario was he had a revolving door in his office for the next 2 weeks with team coming in, sharing their story, thanking him for sharing his acknowledging the connection they now have with him, being able to feel safer to come to him with other stuff. Clearly not a negative at all, other than it didn't get him to do much work for those couple of weeks. But he says it's never been a stronger connection with his people because he was able to do it. Didn't do it as a gimmick. He authentically wanted to share that. If we can do it and we all continue to work on getting better and better, the idea is, though, to see the benefit that it's a weight off me, but it's also the idea that then others are going to be more likely to be vulnerable back. And vulnerability is sharing your weakness, challenges, but it's also saying, I don't know how to do this, or I got it wrong.
Yes.
Because when we won't admit fault, then the others won't, then there'll be blame games and there'll be hiding mistakes and or no conversation at all, and we know where all that ends.
Yeah, no, I've on this podcast, Daniel, I've talked about assumptions, I've talked about three-way conversations, I've talked about conspiracy theories, and they end up being rife in a lot of farming families. And I think that a lot of those things, the root cause could be some of this stuff that we're talking about today.
100%. If we've agreed on behaviours that we speak genuinely, we don't speak behind, we put that in a positive way, then we just hold ourselves to those. But again, the relationship, the seeing something, saying something, and understand that we're all coming from a place of care and wanting to get better. Mm. But underpinning all that is that bit that we come back to, and that is why we're all here in the first place.
Yeah, with the why. I mean, care is really an interesting one too, Daniel, and you've often used the point with us saying that if I don't say something, then what am I inherently saying to you is that I don't care. And I think that was probably an aha moment for me early on when we worked with you about that is, and I went, and that's not what I'm trying to say. And therefore, I really do have to think about this differently. So that was really, really good to do. With farming families, they do have a lot of challenges, and with the nowadays the bigger getting bigger, and one of the benefits I would see from getting this right as early as we can, or certainly, and there's no time to start it, no good time like the right, not now really, if you haven't done it in the past, but starting to introduce employees onto the farm, and do you see some of the benefits of getting this right in terms of being an employee of choice, how does that feed into that?
Yeah, two. So there's that bit. The other bit is if we've already clearly defined as a family how we want our world to look, then it makes it a hell of a lot easier to know who we want to get. Yeah. We're not just going to grab anyone. We're actually going to do it. And like you say, they're going to know what they're coming. We're going to expose them to our culture and say, is this right for you?
Yes.
But the idea that I want to go and work for the cat family, because this is what I've heard, there's a respectful place. They work you hard, but they reward you. You're valued. Your opinion matters versus you're treated like that. Of course, absolutely. Fundamental. I mean, that's where our whole model started with at the leading teams model I talked about. We're at Central Districts, a pretty ordinary footy club.
Yeah.
And Ray asked us on this camp one weekend, and at the time, Port Adelaide were the measuring stick. He said, "How would you be described by Port Adelaide?"
Yeah.
And we said, "Front runner, soft, pretenders, all that." And then the question, of course, is, "Well, how do you want to be described?"
Yeah.
And so there's questions as a family to just throw it. How would a new employee describe us now? How do we want to be? What are some of the counterproductive behaviours that we're doing at the moment that are stopping us from being that team? And then, how do we want it to look going forward? Mm. There's your four fundamental questions.
Mm.
Confronting, challenging, but if we're going to be honest and have a go at them, it can be really rewarding. And pave the way, absolutely, to make it really clear around the people we want to get in going forward.
Mm. You mentioned counterproductive behaviours, and I actually, in the sessions we have with you, Hills, as much as I hate that session, that part of the session, I love it at the same time, because I think it does get to some of the root causes of some things you know, how do you run a session? I mean, is it just as simple as you say, right, well, let's list them? Or how do you bring it up, and how do you deal with trying to get people to open up about counterproductive behaviours?
Yeah. And again, you can imagine that question. What's going to be assumed or worked on beforehand is that there's a safety in the room that people feel they can. I mean, yeah. One of the challenges sometimes is, oh, I don't know if I can say this because the boss is, you know, or dad's listening. Or that's going to be the inherent challenge. We do find more often than not people actually just want to purge sometimes. They actually just want to get it out there, especially if we're making this as a point of, you know, a start of something fresh or purging what's been going on before.
Yeah.
You know, if a family of four or six, we break into a couple of groups, or we write them down ourselves, write down three things that happen at the moment that you reckon are stopping us from being the family business we want to be.
Yeah.
The key bit, there's two key bits in it. When we write that list down and then we say, put your hand up if you're guilty on them, the hardest bit is when someone's still got their hand down and they won't own any of it. So one of the questions I would ask is, which one up there do you sit there and go, yep, that's me more than others? There's the vulnerability opportunity.
Yeah.
The challenge is if dad or, well, I shouldn't generalize, whoever sits and says, no, I reckon I'm pretty right. Well, we're in trouble then. The other bit is, as you say, it's great to acknowledge that in that session. The reality is that ain't the hard bit. The hard bit is doing something. One of the sayings we love to use is knowing is not doing. So it is a step to put them down on paper. The reason we put them down is because we want to decide which ones then we don't want, and we're going to go and try. It won't mean we'll limit them all together because we're human, but the awareness piece and then going away and actually saying, I'm not going to do that anymore, or I'm going to flip that around.
I had a conversation with my 15-year-old son, and I used the phrase, you behaved your way into this problem, you can behave your way out. Right. Similar sort of conversation. If you know, these behaviours, a lot of people try and, I don't know, they don't necessarily hide, but they make excuses. They say, well, that's what we've always done, or that's what I've always done, and don't bother trying to change me now. Do you run into roadblocks with people or with situations that, you know, they can be challenging?
All the time. That's one of the harder lines to shift. I guess we certainly get told your motivational speaker, you go in and lecture people. No. We just go in and help people have conversations they wouldn't normally have. It's not our job to come in and tell you should change. Mm. If there's a feeling in the group that we should change and people are resistant to that, all we say, well that's okay. We're not judging on that, but the consequence of you not doing anything different is you're going to get the same result.
Yeah.
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and we know and expecting a different result.
Yeah.
So we would just put that up to the consequences of, you know, all the other language we use. Is it possible that if we did that differently, we could get a better outcome? But in the end, if the influential people in the family or in the business aren't wanting to make the shift, then that's where our real challenges come. That's where the other folks in that family, that's where the trouble becomes. Mm. And I imagine that's where some really strong friction. So it is the buy-in from, we talk about, you know, in our centers of influence. Now, if you've only got four or six, then probably most of the folk in there that counts, but certainly the more influential amongst them.
The key ones. What's also interesting about farming at the moment, Daniel, and again, I see this from just working with different families is, you know, sort of I'll use the phrase, what got us here won't necessarily get us there. And in a mechanic sense, the next gen are looking to do things in a mechanical way differently. Yeah. But I think that them wanting to do it differently shouldn't necessarily influence what the North Star, as you call it, are in the values. Just because somebody wants to use technology more or not necessarily live on the farm but live somewhere in the local town or, you know, that's not how dad and mum did it. I wouldn't have thought, I think in a true, honest conversation, it shouldn't have an impact.
No, it should be the opposite. If you've got the true purpose, then it's an easier sell for me. There's our purpose. How is this is going to help us get there? Or me living in the town ain't going to affect that.
Yes.
Or they say, yes, it is for this reason. That's the these are the exact reason why you need that purpose statement.
Yeah.
Because you can come back to, hey, we've said we're going to do that. The science says that if we do it this way now, Dad, it's going to be different.
Mm.
The other piece is the ability for that for the new ideas to be respectfully brought up rather than way you do it's crap because there'll be something in those agreed behaviours about respecting others. So it'll be a two-way street there, absolutely.
Yeah, it is that generational change, and it's just unfortunately change is inherent in any business, and accepting change and things like that I find quite challenging. Some of the key things you've mentioned today is working on mechanics versus dynamics. What percentage of businesses do you see you know, are they spending 95% on mechanics? Mm. What sort of time should they be sort of committing to working on these sort of things that we're talking about today?
And we generally ask the question, and I've never had anyone say less than 80. So I had someone today say 100. So anywhere from 80 to 100 will be in the mechanics. And we talked about why before.
Oh, yeah.
I guess who knows the percentage. I guess our theory would be that they are pretty. They should be equally. And yes. We're biased, though. We would say that the dynamics drives the mechanics. Yes, you have to have a strategy. Yes, you have to have a plan. Yes, you have to have a rotation plan. All of that. But without conversations to drive healthy, robust conversation around what we're doing, that bit. So for us, get them level, equal parts, but the dynamics, the conversations will then drive your performance, which will allow you to achieve that purpose.
It's interesting, Hills. I've seen this in non-farming businesses. What I've seen this in sporting teams. Sometimes the mechanics papers over the dynamics. Yep. And if you're going well mechanically and you're making a dollar and everything, it's rained 6 years in a row and people go, well, who cares how we feel about each other? Until something really, when it doesn't rain or something hits the fan, does that become an issue?
Yeah, so we used to call it winning wallpaper. And we all know what happens under wallpaper. There's cracks and they start to open up. So, so the ability for people to review just as hard in good times as in not so good times is really important. Yeah. And I think sporting clubs have got a lot better at that. I'm not sure businesses are following and certainly would challenge around how family business and farming business go. Yeah, so it's a really good one.
Oh, I think that it's just as prevalent in business and in family business as it is on sporting field. It's, you know, the papering over the cracks, you're right, they're still there. Hills, obviously it's been great having you chat today. I just want to say, what are some of if a business or a family wanted to spend some time on getting this right, what are the key messages or outcomes you would expect? What is the key value they would get out of this?
First bit would be, asking, are we really interested in going down this path? Just that investment, that buy-in, do we really want to? And then the key outcomes they want is a really clear picture of why they're doing what they're doing, which will be able to, the new employee will be able to see by their behavior and certainly what they say. And the idea that we prioritize relationships and we challenge each other to open up and become more vulnerable with an agreed set of behaviors.
Mm. Yeah, and it's amazing, even in generational farming families, how quickly the 6 or 7-year-old that comes back and on the farm every day sees these behaviors and they can quickly get ingrained from a very young age. Yeah. So getting them right as early as we can is really important. Okay. Daniel, it's been fantastic having you today, mate. I've really appreciated the chat. And I know we've drawn a bit of a bow into the farming family arena, but I think it's an absolute, really important one. And I really encourage anyone that's got some issues or wants to have further chat, speak to Daniel and his team here in South Australia. And if you're listening interstate as well, I think, Daniel, you guys are all around Australia as well. So Absolutely. Feel free to reach out. Thanks for listening today, and I'll catch you next time on the podcast.